Let's call the meeting of State Government Finance Division to order. We don't have a quorum yet, but invite Mr. Tomes and Mr. King down to the dais here, and we can get started with your presentation, and welcome to the committee. And you can, when you're ready, you can start and introduce yourself for the tape. And
good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Rick King. I'm the chair of the Blue Ribbon Council on IT. And by day, I'm executive vice president of operations at Thomson Reuters. We have about 5,000 employees in Eagan, as you may be aware, so it's one of the larger employers in Dakota County. As a sideline, I also chair the Metropolitan Airports Commission, so we've got a few things that we're doing there. Welcome the chance to talk to you a little bit about the Blue Ribbon Council today. I'm going to go through kind of a chronology and some of the information that we've dealt with so far. Commissioner Tomes will jump in, and we'll both be highlighting a few of the key recommendations that we've already begun to make. And I'll get into recommendations a little bit more. But thank you for the time this morning. In February, the governor issued Executive Order 1902, which established the Blue Ribbon Council on IT. He asked me to chair that, and we began the recruitment of individuals for that task. Cited in the executive order were three main things that he wanted us to focus on: cybersecurity, data management and privacy, and modernization. And I just will read a brief piece here that is in the executive order so that you have a context of what formed our charter. Minnesotans expect reliable, secure, and accurate information technology services when they interact with the state. That is why the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology was created, to ensure the people of Minnesota have access to high quality, dependable services. So that was part of what he set up in the executive order. It called for the council to meet every other month, and its subcommittees, those three that I mentioned, to meet in the in-between months. My first act as chair was to declare that wasn't enough and ask the people that volunteered to meet every month and have the subcommittees meet in between, and there was no dissension, and that's the way we've been doing it since our first meeting in March. Importantly, I think this group was formed from a very interesting combination of people, and I will spend a little more time on that because I think that combination of people has made that conversation much more rich and robust. So we have six agency leaders. Many of those were included in a predecessor organization called the Technology Advisory Committee. We have two county leaders who depend heavily on state IT and work quite interactively with them. What was added was six private sector CIOs. So that's something that had not been tapped before in this format. We had one person that represented union workers, and then we had four legislators named ex officio, two senators, one from each party, two members of the House, one from each party. One of your members, Representative Nash, is one of the members of that, and I have to say he's a strong contributor. I'll also recognize another member of your committee who's not a member of the council, but is, by virtue of the number of times he attends and his participation, that's Representative Elkins. We're appreciative of him bringing his expertise to that group. The membership has great attendance and participation. We've had very good discussions. I think we have upwards of 20 recommendations that we've made in each of our quarterly reports so far. Those recommendations have been unanimously agreed to. We don't vote on things. We do it by pretty much unanimous consent. We have robust discussions before we get to that, that consent. One of the first duties that came out of this shortly in March was one that I was asked by the governor to do, and it serves as sort of a frame for some of the things that can be done looking at IT. He asked me and me to name a couple other people to look at the Minlars software issue and to provide an independent expert review on that, which we did in May. That, I think, broke a logjam, or created some bipartisan collaboration around moving forward with vehicle and terminating the Minlars software and getting a third-party company called Fast ultimately to begin working on vehicle. They were already working on driver's licensing, and so far I can report that that's gone pretty well. I'll just say that that whole idea of searching for third-party software, rather than thinking you've got to build something that's so unique because you are thinking that your requirements are unique, is the biggest first step in the error of most of these processes. We need to figure out exactly what our requirements are on the business side, which is usually the agency. And then we've got to figure out what the market has in terms of solutions to those business requirements. And then I think it requires the groups to get together with the industry to figure out how available software can fit with those business requirements. And sometimes it takes a little compromise on the business side to look at how to do certain things in a different way so that a third-party product can be bought off the shelf and used. That requires the business side to be a little more creative than they normally are. Hello, Representative Mason. I mentioned this in a little more detail because this situation exists over and over within IT and the state government. It's not that you shouldn't ever do a custom piece of software build, but your disposition should be, why isn't there something available in third-party world that you can buy that can do what you need to do? The sooner you can come to those conclusions and reconcile the business requirements from the agencies to that software, the better it will be for all of us, because the ongoing maintenance and support is taken care of by the third party. If failing in that whole process, you see that you're doing something that's unique in the 50 states, in the X number of counties, and you feel like you have to build something, I would say call a timeout and rethink yourself before you jump and make sure that that's actually true. There are cases where you need to do that. Sometimes small applications, interfaces, there are many examples of things where you have to do that build yourself, but there are many more if you ask the serious question where industry software can do the trick for you. The other piece that I mentioned very briefly in that explanation is a second part that I think is important that we've uncovered. What's really hard was the constraints that agencies and sometimes Minute put in front of themselves to come to agreements with a proper third-party software vendor. To do that work properly, you really need to have in-depth discussions with those companies. And it was felt, but not conclusive, I will get to that in a minute, that it was felt by the agencies that they could not interact with those third parties sufficiently with the requirements to iterate with them to understand whether or not they could bring the solutions forward to the state that the agency and Minute required. What we found out in looking at the purchasing statutes with the Department of Administration and others was that, in fact, there are ways to do that within current statute. We thought we'd have to propose something new to allow the right kind of collaboration between the agency, Minute, and this potential third-party vendor in order for them to fully understand what we were trying to do and to help us with what it's going to take to do it. The fact is that we do have that authority. We just have been cautious about using it, apparently. So we're going to highlight in the report that we think that should be exercised more fully when it's appropriate, and we think that the statute does allow for more collaboration with selected vendors to get further along in making sure that third-party software can fit the bill. Now, getting back to the BRC, what we've done in the monthly meetings since March, we've heard from 8 agencies and counties and presentations about their technologies, their applications, their relationships, their requirements and needs and hopes, aspirations. We've had 25 additional interactive presentations from various groups, including information security and others, experts from the outside of the state agencies, companies that are member companies, the CIOs, and so forth. As I said, we've got a bunch of recommendations. We'll dive into those a little more. We've done June, September, and December quarterly reports. There's recommendations. There's 23 of them in there so far. We're going to skip the March report in June when the task force expires. We will have a final report. We'll accumulate all of the recommendations in each of the quarterly reports into one document. We'll synthesize any of the duplicates in there and so forth. Just to give you an idea, we've a recommendation that turns the Blue Ribbon Council into an ongoing committee, subsuming what's called that Technology Advisory Committee. We have a recommendation to allow for a technology, and separately from that, a cyber committee to go in depth. I'll particularly talk about the cyber committee. These would be created under the auspices of the LCC, so that they could function all year long. But the cyber one is particularly critical because we would like to have that committee constituted so that that committee could have confidential briefings from the state CISO, a chief information security officer, and the office of Minute, the CIO, so that select representatives from this body and the Senate could be in that committee under non-disclosure agreement and hear the real actual activities in cyber that occur on a daily basis across state government. I think that's a protection to allow a closed session, a capability to fully brief rather than staying at 30,000 feet where you don't really hear the issues in depth. So that will be one of our recommendations. We have recommendations that involved loaned executives from corporations to be part of the state for a brief period, for IT training, for training around cyber, for data management, for procurement efficiency, as I discussed. We'll have a modernization playbook recommendation, and then things about county collaboration, data collection, and sharing, along with all the cyber things that I spoke about. As I said, this is a very active committee, not one that stays at a high level. They're into the weeds. The subcommittees go into the weeds. Specifically, the recommendations are meaty. So think of dirty hands getting in there and mixing it up. It's been very effective that way. I'd have to say, if any of you are actually involved in creating such task force that involve people with this kind of mandate, the actual inclusion of the legislators has been a brilliant stroke. I've fed that back to the governor's office as well as the Senate to say that has added a huge amount to my experience, because I ran a broadband task force 2007 and 8. We didn't have legislators on it. We had agency, CIOs, county, and so forth. But the addition of the legislators has been fantastic, because my expectation coming out of our recommendations will be that the legislators will help serve talking to their peers and being advocates for the kinds of things that we've discussed. And in fact, whether they are on that task force or whether they are attending, it should serve the same purpose. So we appreciate the time commitment of the people here. Representative Nash has really focused a lot on cyber, as probably no surprise to any of you here, because I think we all need to know a lot more about cyber. And I'll just say that we had a great event at Metro State, which was the first of its kind for specifically for legislators to learn more about cyber from a panel of people that Metro State put together. I think there were 30 or so attendees, which the time is pretty good. We're going to chip away at that. We'll do more things like that. Very appreciative of that. And as I said, Representative Elkins has added a lot to the discussion about business process and other items. So it's and data privacy discussion. So that's been extremely valuable. We're certainly looking forward to making our next report. To say a little bit more just about cyber, I will only say that education is going to be really important, and figuring out how to have a steady form of funding for those things will be critical. And clearly having that group that can be briefed privately, they'll certainly understand why we would need such a thing. Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back to you for Commissioner Tomes.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your report. And Commissioner Tomes.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Nelson and committee members. For the record, my name is Turek Tomes, and I am the state's chief information officer and the commissioner of Minnesota IT Services. I'd like to just draw your attention briefly to the three documents that we provided, and I'm not going to speak to them. I just wanted to, you know, just briefly highlight what they are. One is our annual report. It's kind of a rear 2019 in terms of the number of initiatives, projects, opportunities that we saw in 2019. One is our quarterly report, and we're really committed to producing and providing this quarterly report to all of our stakeholders, and would incredibly welcome any thoughts and feedback from you as it relates to things that you would like to hear from our organization as it relates to, you know, the things that are going on from an information technology perspective, both in the executive branch and beyond. I think that quarterly report is really important, not just to share what we're doing, what we have done, and where we're going, but it's a huge commitment also to transparency as it relates to the metrics and numbers that are provided there. And then lastly, we provided a copy of our tactical plan. It's a body of work that will carry us for the next 12 months. Things really that we recently learned and discovered, tremendously influenced by the work of the Blue Ribbon Council. I'm excited to be back here with you at the House.
Commissioner, we have the annual report and the quarter report. For some reason, we didn't get the tactical plan, so.
We will make sure you get a copy of it. I apologize. I'm excited to be back here with you at the House State Government Finance Committee today. The last time I saw many of you, it was literally within maybe the first 2 weeks of me starting, and my head was spinning quite a bit. I'm 9 months in now, and since I've begun my work as the Minute Commissioner, I've gained a much fuller understanding of the breadth and scope of the work that Minute does on a daily basis to help our agencies do everything from maintain our state's transportation infrastructure, to protect our forests and waterways, to ensure that the state is prepared to respond in the event of a public health emergency. I look forward to the opportunity today to dive into some of that work with you. First, though, I would like to take just a quick moment here to express my gratitude to the Blue Ribbon Council on Information Technology Chair Rick King. Chair King has skillfully guided the discussions of a diverse and experienced group of IT and business leaders, resulting in very productive and substantive conversations around the future of state IT. I'm grateful to all the members of the Blue Ribbon Council and their contributions in time and effort to improve state technology services for all Minnesotans. We are fortunate to have not only some of the brightest leaders from the private sector, but also dedicated legislators and key government partners at the table with us as well. They are dedicating a significant amount of time, not just in monthly full council meetings, but also in monthly subcommittee meetings. These members are taking each outlier, each piece of the puzzle, and each question into account. As we've heard repeatedly from our private sector members, and what we know from experience, mature IT capability and innovation is critical to the success of any organization, government and private sector alike. We simply can't achieve the outcomes that government should deliver without these capabilities. The Blue Ribbon Council members have really taken an inordinate amount of time understanding the intricacies of state government and everything from procurement to the interactions with business partners to ultimately also the role that stakeholders play, the role that driver and vehicle that deputy registrars play in delivering, you know, critical driver vehicle services. We've had outside presentations from some of these private sector organizations like Cargill and others. I've had a chance to go visit Land O'Lakes. I've been out to visit Cargill to make sure that we are really sharing everything that we can share and also leveraging from learning how complex organizations like Cargill, which is actually probably really similar to state government in some sense, how they deliver technology services. I wanted to take time today to highlight some of the work of two of the Blue Ribbon Council subcommittees, the Modernization Subcommittee and the Data Management and Privacy Subcommittee. The Modernization Subcommittee's work has focused around the processes and responsibilities associated with large-scale modernization efforts undertaken by state agencies. Their work has focused not just on the technology modernization work involved in making these efforts successful, but also the business side change management work involved in re-engineering business processes to modernize service delivery. They dove deep to understand the existing procurement processes around IT to try and identify opportunities for effective communication with our vendor partners during the procurement phase, with the goal of ensuring that both parties enter into contracts with a clear understanding of what is needed and what will be delivered. Their goal is now to develop a framework or a playbook for how agencies should undertake modernization efforts that lay out the activities, roles, and responsibilities of Minute and our agency business partners in all facets of a modernization journey. This includes business case development, business process analysis, business process reengineering, stakeholder engagement, acquisition, solutioning with vendors, talent strategy, managing change, and systems operations and maintenance. This work relates directly to recommendations of the Office of the Legislative Auditor, who rightly called for Minute to provide greater assistance to state agencies to successfully navigate their roles in software development and implementation processes. I believe this work holds tremendous promise for the executive branch and our ability to create a culture in our agencies that embraces change and looks to modernize how we deliver government services with a human-centered lens and the effective use of modern technology. By developing a consistent but appropriately flexible approach to how we as a state enterprise carry out modernization work, we can cultivate best practices and develop staff competencies that can be leveraged across agency lines. I think the modernization playbook is really going to be a really instrumental vehicle for the executive branch, and we expect it to be a living document. It's going to really highlight what the journey looks like from a process perspective, both from the business side as well as from the technology side. And by having this as a living document that will be shared and continually iterated around, I think we're going to see tremendous success with both larger scale modernization opportunities as well as smaller scale ones. Second, I wanted to highlight the work of the Data Privacy Subcommittee, who have actually renamed themselves to the Data Management and Privacy Subcommittee. This name change is reflective of the scope of the discussion that has occurred in the subcommittee, which has worked to disentangle concepts like privacy and security with assistance of Delta's Chief Privacy Officer. They have also worked to understand the current state of data governance, data sharing, and data management in the executive branch. They have offered recommendations to minimize the collection of unnecessary data on individuals when developing programs and policies, to align data definitions to facilitate data sharing and system operability, to establish a common data catalog and a metadata framework. These recommendations reflect a natural tension that has emerged frequently in BRC conversations around data, one that I've experienced many times in my work as a technologist. On one hand, it is our responsibility to leverage the data we have to better inform program development and improve outcomes for Minnesotans. This often requires the sharing of data across program and agency silos, what can be understood as a loosening of restrictions on how data is used. On the other hand, it is our responsibility to protect the privacy of Minnesotans who have entrusted us with that data, and protecting privacy requires restrictions be established and consistently enforced. Striking the balance is neither easy nor simple, as I'm sure all of you who have ever been involved with a data practices issue at the legislature understand all too well. The subcommittee is currently working to develop recommendations that address potential gaps in how the state approaches data privacy and data management issues, including looking at how we can move toward a more coherent and consistent approach to data policy and governance across the executive branch. In January, Minute finalized our 2020 tactical plan, which focuses on advancing tangible tactics to improve our processes, enhance service maturity, and promote greater collaboration and connection across very diverse Minute teams and agency operating environments. Many of these tactics relate directly to areas of focus for the BRC, particularly as it relates to developing consistent processes around how we deliver on modernization projects and more fully leveraging the power of the data we maintain. This plan has also been shaped by my conversations with leaders and staff across Minute and the executive branch, as well as my conversations with legislators who all recognize how critical it is that we get this right. After all, there can be endless disagreement about what we want the government to do, but we can all agree we want the government to do what it is, what it does well. And now, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to hand it back to Chair King to discuss. Oh, you already went through the cybersecurity.
I could give a little.
Okay.
There's a couple of points on cybersecurity.
Mr. King, go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to give you just a little bit more on cybersecurity. You can tell by emphasizing it how critical I think it is and how critical the BRC thinks it is to the state. First thing I think we need to think about is we have designations in our state for things that are called critical infrastructure. I think at the point, we are at the point electronically now where cybersecurity needs to be deemed as critical infrastructure. And with that, it becomes something you can think about for the funding that's made available for critical infrastructure and work with public and private partnerships to facilitate better protection for state. I think it's a very difficult subject to talk about because people often say, if we spend $50 million, are we okay? And the answer is no, you're probably not. You're $50 million better if you've spent it right. But there is no guarantee in the world of cybersecurity, unfortunately. But the kinds of programs that keep the simple stuff from occurring can be very effective, and that includes education for not just the executive branch, which is the branch that the BRC was actually told to focus on, but also the legislative branches, the courts, Secretary of State, all of the state of Minnesota needs to be concerned about the infrastructure. And right now, we don't have anybody holistically looking at all of that package. We've kind of done it by constitutional grouping or by agency. The executive agencies are trying to pull that all together along with the counties and so forth and somewhat the schools underneath the Minute auspices. It would be really good if we could have a more holistic view of our protections and our opportunities to increase those protections, including education. I'll give you a quick example about what I mean by education. Oddly enough, yesterday afternoon, my mother, who's 86, and an avid iPad user, sends me this note. It's an email purportedly from Amazon saying, click on this link to go verify your account. And we all know that's not a good thing to do. If there's something with your account, you need to go to the website for Amazon, look it up yourself, not click on that link. Turns out that having the IT son that they do, they sent me the email. I looked at it and I said, please tell me you didn't click on this. No, we didn't. Well, anyway, I said, okay, I'm going to go on to your Amazon account, make sure nobody bought anything, change your password, all that type of stuff. Can you imagine that across the entire state of Minnesota with people who did not grow up in the digital age dealing with that things that include also Medicare, Social Security, and so forth, as we increasingly do more of our transactions federally and state online, which is a good thing, but with it comes this price that you pay with that one mistake, that one email. And it was, look at that email, and it was perfect. There was no misspelling. The only thing was that the URL that it came from was totally off base. How do you explain to your 86-year-old mother to look at that? You don't. You say, call me. So thankfully she did, but not everybody has those people to call, so we've got to really highly educate people in this area, and that's one of the things that's our greatest concern. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop.
Well, thank you. And when you talk about cybersecurity, and from that standpoint, you're suggesting that we have a cyber guru that goes across all departments of government, from the constitutional offices to the legislature to the courts, which are all three separate parts of government, but we'd be better. You're saying we'd be better off if we have one person overseeing that type of cyber, or looking at it in all the departments. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, Mr. Chair. I think each of those groups today, fractionally, has to deal with the same threats. They're just not, you're not combining all of the resources to look at the capability of having better deals to protect you. Dividing into smaller pieces is suboptimal. I know that causes some challenges to look across, but I'm suggesting that for cyber, yes.
And then I guess the other question I have to start out with is, where are we, and maybe the commissioner can better answer this, where are we with protecting ourselves from ransomware? I know one state got hit with some ransomware, locked up data that the state had, and are we protecting ourselves, doing backups so that if that were to happen, we have a way to reconstitute this data so that we don't end up having to deal with a ransomware attack?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the ransomware threat is probably by far the most imminent threat that's facing us. And in some ways, it's, you know, almost analogous to the new form of protest, where it's, you know, very easy, quite conceivable for a, you know, worldwide effort that, you know, can launch to disrupt government services and manifest itself in the form of a ransomware attack. We certainly have a lot of sophistication to protect ourselves from ransomware attacks, but I think, you know, it's an unrealistic thought that you're immune or that you can buy your way out of that. It is a ever-vigilant effort. The systems that really comprise state government have far reaches. We connect with every county, with every city, and one of the things, you know, that has to be understood is that it is really at the point of weakest link. And so while you can protect yourself, you know, tremendously, these systems that interconnect with each other all pose tremendous risk. And so, you know, fundamental is the backup and recovery piece. About 3 or 4 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, I issued a commissioner directive related to ransomware and backups, and really targeted primarily at verifying, validating what are our priority one applications, and making sure that our emphasis on, let's focus on the most critical things and work our way down from there. And that has yielded great results. I think our priority one inventory is probably reduced in half because of really substantial conversations with our business partners to really verify, you know, what is a priority one application, like in the event of an outage, what is most important. And so the education steps are absolutely critical. Continued investment to protect the many endpoints that comprise state government is absolutely critical. We see in many instances where if you're not at a minimum baseline of protection in terms of the tools, technologies, and processes that you have, you're probably going to have an infection. Every day we become aware of a ransomware attack within Minnesota government at large, and we'll continue to be vigilant and doing everything that we can to protect state resources.
Thank you. I have a few questions here. Representative Nash. You won't look up, probably one or two.
Well, this is the best day ever in committee, Mr. Chair. finally, after 6 years, we get to have a full day talking about nothing but IT.
Representative Nash, I know when he talked about you and cyber, I've never heard you talk about
it. I know. I'm pretty shy when it comes to cybersecurity. Well, first, to the testifiers and Mr. Chair and members, I want to first echo thanking our private sector partners that have joined us in the Blue Ribbon. You know, we all signed up, we all volunteered for this, and yes, a couple of us volunteered above and beyond, but these are folks that I work with in my private sector life, and they're super busy. We've got some very talented people who come from household name companies who are volunteering their time to come and dedicate their experience and their expertise to helping make our state better. And first with Mr. King. So Thomson Reuters, this small going concern that might catch on, I'm not sure. But these are all companies that you all know, and they have come to give us their time and a lot of help. So thanks very much to them. Mr. King and the commissioner talked about the critical infrastructure nature of what we're dealing with. And wouldn't you know it, I have a bill, Mr. Chair, to declare our cybersecurity and our network critical infrastructure. So you'll be seeing those jackets really soon, Mr. Chair, because it is. It is absolutely mission critical that we focus on protecting what we have. I just, not a little over a week and a half ago, I spent time with the CIO of the state of North Dakota, and they are interested in partnering with us as well to share what they know. And in the course of my professional life, I've flown around the country and talked with a lot of folks. We're doing good, and we have room for growth. And I think that the Blue Ribbon has been a really great on-ramp for this. So I'm pleased that we are dealing with the report. And I'll ask the chair of the BRC, the report is your intention and the governor's intention to take the recommendations out of there and implement them as policy where possible, and then have those generate legislation where needed to create further policy. Is that correct?
That's correct. Excuse me.
That's okay. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also want to talk about the fact that, you've heard me say this, ones and zeros don't care and don't know if they're Republican or Democrat.
Right.
And this has been a very collaborative effort. And I do want to drive that home. We don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Good ideas are good ideas. They're not Republican ideas. They're not Democrat ideas. And I guess we have two major other parties. They're not marijuana party ideas. But the work is really pretty fantastic that we're doing. And a lot of hours. So if you can't make it in to attend the meetings, there's always a phone bridge. I had the flu, I dialed in, and we got a lot of work done. I'm excited also that this is gonna help us finish off the things that have been sort of nagging, beleaguering things like full consolidation. We've been talking about that, finally getting all the departments and agencies consolidated. That's pretty exciting. Well, at least for the nerds in the room, is exciting. Because ultimately it's going to save the state money and protect what we have a lot better. And I'm pleased that we're talking about cybersecurity. You should be surprised at that. But the question, I think, was around ransomware from the chair.
Yeah.
There have been a number of high-profile state ransomware efforts, attacks. Texas and Colorado are probably the most recent. And along those lines, and I've spoken with the chair and I've spoken with the commissioner, I'm excited possibly to look at what we've called a cyber core, which is that public-private partnership. And that still has to be kind of hammered out on some of the details, but to allow professionals who do this for a living for the Fortune 500, Fortune 50 companies to lend a hand and some experience and some resources and tools. The state of Texas mitigated theirs in, I was at a NCSL cybersecurity task force. They mitigated it in like 5 days. I don't know that we could do that with the totality of the attack that they had. Colorado Department of Transportation had another one, and it was done in a handful of days. that should be our goal for all of these. But it's also around educating you all, much like Chair King talked about his mom not clicking on things. That's a thing that I have in my office at my day job. Don't click on, and then there's an S word that comes after that. And that's probably the best advice we can give anybody. Just don't click on stuff. And that wasn't the S word. But I'm excited that this is finally coming to a head. And, Mr. Chair, I think that this committee is going to be the vehicle for a lot of those bills that come out of this. Just know, and I'm being as nonpartisan I can, the bills that you're going to see, we should not slow down. We should not beat them up. We should just move them along, because it's going to have the weight of the governor's office. It's going to have the commissioner. It's going to have the Senate, and we don't pay that much attention to them. But it's going to be bipartisan, and it's going to have the voices of people from private sector. This is probably one of the best things that's happened to the state relative to IT for a long time. And I just can't tell you how big of a deal it is, because you've gotten people who have wildly diverse backgrounds into the room, and we're all rolling up our sleeves and we're leaning in to get this thing fixed so that the state of Minnesota for years to come can hit a level of maturity that we haven't been able to really achieve or see at the end of the tunnel. And lastly, in my conversations with the CIO from North Dakota, is something that I hope that we eventually get to as well, is their task from their governor is to make every graduating senior cyber literate and help them understand what it is to be out in the world and not click on whatever you want to call that, but to understand what their role and the needs are. I think that Minute and the Blue Ribbon Commission can be a jumping off point for that effort around our state. So a lot of good stuff. I know there's a lot more to come. We're not even close to being done. But thank you both for being here, and thank you for the folks who aren't here that have put a lot of time and effort into this.
That was more of a comment. Representative Claiborne.
Mine may be more of a comment as well. I would like to thank you for being here today and thank everyone who's participated, just echoing Representative Nash's thank yous. There are a couple of things that were mentioned today that I just want to touch upon, and then if you want to respond, great. If not, you can just nod your head. So Chair King, you mentioned that we very seldom need to build anything alone. So my thought that came up with that is, do we test drive for security the products before we would purchase them or include them? So that's one thing. I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. If there's something we can use off the shelf, I'm great, but I want to make sure that we're not falling into purchasing something that then would put us at risk with every other state at the exact same time. So we're trying to scramble to fix that. The other thing is, I know that prevention is way less expensive than remedy. So when we're thinking about what our steady funding, and maybe this is to you, Commissioner, when we're thinking about what does that steady funding look like, a big piece of that is going to be educating our community, because I hear it's a simple IT fix. Why are we spending so much money, right? So when we are thinking about that living document of modernization, letting people know up front and letting our committee know up front in that living document what we anticipate salaries for talent acquisition. What does that look like in the broader picture? What is our vision for the state going forward, and what does that expectation of cost look like? Because oftentimes it's setting that bar. I'm sure Representative Nash doesn't really want to work for free in his private work, nor does Representative Elkins. So what do those costs look like? And so those are my big thing. I do see it as a critical infrastructure piece. And for someone who really is a privacy geek in many ways, I want to make sure that we are protecting the citizens of Minnesota. And I do agree with Representative Nash. This is really a one Minnesota project. our IT and our security. It's not Republican, Democrat, or Libertarian, or any of the other cannabis party issues. It's a Minnesota issue. And I would really like to see these parties and groups all work well together. Thank you.
And would either like to comment or Brant? Commissioner Tomes.
Chair Nelson, committee members, thank you for the question. I absolutely agree. Across the industry, I think there in these spaces are, you know, fortunately a lot of benchmarks that we can look towards. And IT spend on security as a percentage of total IT spend is, you know, an absolutely really thank you, agrees.
Is really an
important benchmark to look at. And it's complicated. We have an application portfolio of approximately 2,800 applications, and you know that's everything from the really large ones, the types of systems that drive human services like MMIS and Maxis, to smaller applications that are used by one or two people, maybe to keep track and evaluate infant mortality. And the modernization carries with it not just an opportunity to close really critical information security loopholes, but it really provides an opportunity to perform the business function much better. And that's a collective culture change that we're gonna, you know, continue to really promote and work at, the role that technology plays in improving outcomes for the service areas that we provide. And so the holistic approach related to how do we re-engineer, how do we do the business process re-engineering that has a technology component, and then how do we leverage technology and engineer the security constructs into those up front is really important. One of the things that we're rolling out across the executive branch, and it's really kind of simplistic, but you know, a huge impact is we're rolling out what's referred to as multi-factor authentication across the entirety of the executive branch. And it's probably not rolling out quite as fast as I would like to see it roll out, because it really is a absolutely easy protector from a certain set of data breaches that occur because credentials are compromised and someone tries to access someone's email account. And so continuing to leverage some of these industry best practices that are really readily available for us and at our grasp. I think another area that's really important is to focus across Minnesota, and not just, you know, for our sake and state government, but really for our greater marketplaces, to build out more strength as it relates to security professionals, to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to educate young kids that are in high school or college students as it relates to what a career in cybersecurity looks like. I can share from a personal note, I have a son that is a senior at the Air Force Academy. And he just recently got his job assignment, and the way it works in the Air Force when you're getting ready to graduate from the Air Force Academy is you prioritize 5 job choices, and you may get one of those or you may not. And he was lucky enough to get one of his 5 job choices, and it was probably his 3rd or 4th choice, but he's going to be a cybersecurity professional. And that kid could not be more excited now that he's learned a little bit more about how bright his future is. And so I think just expanding the number of resources we have, not just in the Twin Cities, but you know, in broader outstate markets as well, related to cybersecurity professionals, is going to be really important.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, I'll answer the first question that you had. Commissioner Tomes might want to add. When you do the RFP work, you certainly have a whole section on cybersecurity that you ask questions about, and you obviously want to have one-on-one discussions with the vendor about certain certificated guarantees that they have relative to their applications. Definitely don't want to invite a weaker link into the system. So that's a key point, not just for the state, but that's the way all of the businesses would look at the same thing. Additionally, there's an emerging field of rating certain companies, almost like a FICO score for companies, so that you can look visibly and publicly at an independent agency that's giving them a score. Now, those are perhaps not the final decision point today. They're not as refined as FICO's are, but eventually they will be, and they're available in the public domain so that you can see them. commenting a little bit on the commissioner's testimony, there are two points I'd make. That list of 2,900 or whatever applications, that's just the executive branch. So remember when I was thinking bigger, what about the rest? And same with the education process and so forth. We do need to think about it holistically as a state, full state government, I think.
Thank you.
Elkins isn't Representative Elkins, you're next, but I was going to say that one of the things I've noticed in my time living in Minnesota is that in the state we're very bad at, we buy something and then we let it get out of date and don't upgrade it because it costs money to upgrade it, and the legislature is bad about, you know, we fight back and forth, Democrats, Republicans across the aisle, about what we want to fund and what we don't want to fund, and we're bad about letting things get out of date, and then we're replacing a Model T with a 2019 vehicle, and it's sometimes when we make those kind of jumps, it costs us a lot more money than if we had upgraded over the time. And I think, and it's not just in IT services, it's in all types of services that the state has a tendency to do that, because of the funding, and we're trying to be judicious with our taxpayer dollars. And I mean, that's something I think we're bad at state government and in the legislature of funding it. So, Mr. Kane.
Well said, I would say, Mr. Chair. Point would be, if you're looking at a third-party product, you're probably somewhere between 18 and 20% annually after you do the initial licensing to maintain it, and then you're going to be given updates to it. So you've got to have that stream available in order to pay the vendor. That keeps you up to date, and then every once in a while you're probably going to have to do something more major. Think about it on an internal application. So if it costs $20 million over 2 years to do, then that same stream would be 20% of that in the succeeding years, and very seldom is that money put into a maintenance and operation budget. That budget gets constrained in general, and then everything that's ever bought or used has to come out of that in some cookie cutter fashion, and things rapidly fall behind, be it hardware, software, network, whatever it is.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and if you hadn't brought that up, I was going to.
Well, Representative Elkins, and we do it with our buildings too. We build great buildings, and it's everyone's there for the ribbon cutting of the brand new building, but replacing the roof or fixing the plumbing, we don't have ribbon cutting ceremonies for that. So it's not just in IT, it's across everything we do. We tend to build the big things, and then we don't deal with taking care of it over the long run.
And to the earlier point about this all being nonpartisan stuff, it truly is. So just as an example, behind the scenes, Representative Vogel and I have been, Representative Vogel serves on the LCC Oversight Committee for the new Legislative Budget Office. He's been my co-conspirator in an initiative to improve the quality of the IT information that comes in our fiscal notes, including, for example, making sure that those tails of the license fees and the funding that's required in order to make sure that when the patches are available, they get they actually get applied, that there's staffing there to do that kind of thing. We should start seeing more of that kind of information come before us when we see fiscal notes that have an IT component. And so we worked with Minute and with the staff of the new Legislative Budget Office, Michelle Weber and Joe Harney on her staff has particularly been involved in this. Joe has also been following the Blue Ribbon Council meeting. So a good example of, you know, a couple of us working across the aisle to accomplish something that is just good government stuff. I have to say more generally that my informal participation in the BRC has been highly satisfying. As Mr. King and the Commissioner pointed out, there's a great deal of participation from the private sector on this body as well, and those perspectives have been invaluable. Commission has been receiving, you know, a series of reports from different agencies that, you know, basically can tell us, you know, where different agencies are, and we can make the assessment. And I can say that over the course of those presentations, there are a number of agencies that are doing exemplary things within their silos, and you just don't hear about them. So we have Assistant Commissioner Lee Ho from Department of Revenue back here. Several years ago, they made a transition to a new FAST Enterprises tax administration system. And we actually, you know, at the beginning of the year last year when we were having the agency presentations, we kind of got an overview into what they're doing. But you didn't read anything about that in the newspaper because they did a really good job implementing it. And they're an example of an agency that has continuously been applying re-engineering principles to, as they do IT projects, you know, reform their processes as well. So. You would see things like that, or at least in particular areas that individual agencies are doing really well. The Secretary of State's office, as a constitutional office, is doing a really good job of what's referred to as master data management. In their case, making sure that voter data is kept updated and deduplicated. They take data from a variety of external sources to make sure that happens, including the driver and vehicle services data, but they also take external sources like the postal change of address file, the Social Security death master file to know when people have passed away. And there are pockets like that all over state government where individual agencies are doing things, particular things, really, really well. And under Commissioner Tomes, what I am seeing is just a much greater effort to take those, you know, and through the BRC process, you know, take the things that we can see where an agency is doing something in an exemplary manner and make sure that those best practices get propagated out across multiple agencies. But you know, some of these capabilities, like master data management, and are very expensive, and we really would it would make much more sense actually to have the basic capability to be stood up in Minute, and Minute providing services like these to the agencies, so that we don't have, you know, the same expensive capability being stood up in silo after silo, especially as we've discussed. Commissioner Tomes, you know, something like master data management, there's a lot of really good off-the-shelf software out there, but it's very expensive, and it's usually the license is based on how many lives you're managing through the software. So you could be being billed multiple times, one's for the life as it's observed by the Department of Human Services, one by the Secretary of State, one by Education. We're paying the same license fee multiple times when we could be paying it once. So there's lots of potential on stuff like that. The siloization of data is probably one of my biggest concerns, and in some ways that there's a lot of potential for us to be part of the solution on the SIF. So there are barriers in provisions in the Data Practices Act related to the data held by individual agencies that get in the way of sharing. And in some cases, it's not just across agencies. Within DHS, I've come to the conclusion that a lot of the problems we have there is that because there are silos within the silos where we have, separate systems for each program, and the systems across the programs don't talk to each other. I actually had a bill last year which provided past required funding for the Department of Human Services to dedupe their Medicaid IDs. So the nature of Medicaid IDs, the Medicaid program, medical assistance in Minnesota, is, you know, people come on and off it. They'll get a job, they'll go off, they'll lose the job, they'll go back on, and the DHS system METS was. Every time that they would come back on, they would get a new Medicaid ID, and it was affecting them. But one of the things I came to realize out of this is that it's really the counties which are the primary delivery mechanism for most DHS programs that are bearing the brunt of it, or in this case, even the school districts, because someone would present a Medicaid ID to a school district to get their kids eligible for free and reduced lunches, and there would be no data under that ID because that was an old ID and a new ID had been issued, and so there was no data under the ID that had been presented. And this kind of stuff was a huge issue for both the counties and the school districts in this case. And so there's lots and lots of that that we can address. One of the other things that we're asking for as part of the new fiscal note is making sure that the agency personnel understand what's going to be required from them out of a big problem. It was very obvious from reading the Minlar's reports that a big part of the problem was that DPS did not understand what was going to be required from them. We did not, even if they had understood it, we hadn't provided them adequate funding to be able to staff what their responsibilities should have been. So one of the things we're trying to accomplish with the new fiscal notes is to make sure that the agencies themselves are being prodded to step up to the plate and acknowledge what their responsibilities are, and that the cost of people who are going to have to participate in their projects are included in that funding as well. And then finally, I'd just like to mention that there is a valuable role for us to play, and there are about a half dozen of us have IT backgrounds in this body right now. So Representative Nash is our preeminent cybersecurity expert, of course, but Representative Lucero also works in cybersecurity. Representative Noor is a systems administrator. Representative Bonner is a project manager and agile scrum manager. My background is in information architecture. And so we also have a breadth of experience in this body now that can put eyes on this stuff. But to use a specific example, so I'm serving on the LCC committee that was newly formed and charged to figure out any reforms that could be made to the vehicle registration fee structure that would make it easier to implement, because there was an OLA report two falls ago, I guess, but about a transaction accuracy in Minlar's and how bad it was. And when we dug into it, we discovered that a big part of the problem is that there were just contradictory and ambiguous provisions in state law that made it impossible to code the systems to produce accuracy. So in this task force, one of the things that we did is reached out to the deputy registrars and the dealers and the people from Fast Enterprises, our vendor, said, look, guys, what is the data that we would need in order, what it would support an accurate calculation of registration fees? And we kind of backed into it. We looked at what is the available data that is generally available to both the registrars and the dealers and to DVS staff. And in the end, the bill that we're drafting, Representative Tabke will be carrying it, basically provides a new definition for the base value of the car that has data that is generally available and will allow the dealers and the registrars to accurately calculate the tax due. So, in the last week, we had the DPS Oversight Committee, which is chaired by Senator Newman and Representative Hornstein, is now looking at the Real ID. So one of the things that I had requested that be presented at their last meeting on last Friday was, first of all, we established that the 10-week delay in getting your Real ID really is in the back office at Driver and Vehicle Services. And part of that is because of provisions in state law that currently require DVS in the back room to look at every application twice. So we asked DVS to give us a list of what are things that we could change in state law that would not violate the federal requirements, would not violate the integrity of the process, that would help you streamline your process and reduce the backlog. So they are working with our staff. We'll have a bill that I expect Representative Hornstein will be carrying to streamline the portions of the law that will enable DVS to streamline their processes and reduce the waiting time and the backlog. So, and there's lots of that kind of stuff where there's work that we need to do, because, quite frankly, we're a big part of the problem sometimes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do have some comments. Over the years on this committee and public safety and HHS, I've heard of some of the issues that we're trying to address, and you know, I have a few questions as to how we've gone and made progress in addressing those. The first on, in your annual report, pages 4 and 5, you go over the MET or MINET. It's the Enterprise Network. And on there, I'm curious about the real-time monitoring. I've visited the Azure cybersecurity office and seen their monitoring and familiar with some of their approaches. Have we made any progress to pushing AI out to the nodal area and having logic flags and algorithms to try and prevent as opposed to be responsive to cyber incidents?
Representative or Commissioner Tomes.
I was going to let Chair King take a crack at that question. Chair Nelson, members, thank you for the question. So we have made significant progress in that regard, and certainly they are, I would quantify them as AI-like tools, both from our SIM technology that's in place that allows us to correlate events that we're seeing in multiple locations together. Certainly not anywhere near the maturity level of Microsoft, for example, and the capability that they have. And I think that's where continued investment in, you know, the technology component that protects our resources is really important. By way of an example, we had a really really severe cyber event not too long ago, within the last 6 months, at one of our correctional, at two of our correctional facilities. And this was an unbelievably sophisticated attack that was concentrated at those two particular correctional facilities. And when the first call that comes, you know, asks, you know, my question was, are the door systems compromised and are the cameras compromised? You know, certainly, as you can imagine, is not, you know, too comforting, and neither of those two were compromised. And in that event, our monitoring tools detected what started off initially as a malware attempt, and we quickly isolated, you know, those networks, and then repeated malware attempts that then escalated over the weekend to much more sophisticated ransomware attempts that, again, our tools and in part, you know, I think one could quantify it as AI, you know, light, was able to kind of repel that. But our concern then, you know, quickly turned to the rest of MNET. And are there other locations in MNET? And that's where, to Representative Nash's point, you quickly see that the need to partner and have capacity that not only deals with an imminent threat, but allows you then to pivot and turn and look beyond in other locations, you quickly run into capacity barriers just from a people and partner perspective. And that's where a partnership with the private sector or even with security professionals in Minnesota, other organizations like in Texas, they partner with the National Guard. Is really important. One of the things that's of interest in that burst out in terms of capacity is it really has to be people that exercise those types of responses on a, you know, really current and ongoing basis. A cybersecurity professional in and of itself probably isn't going to be what you need in a moment of crisis. It's people that are eminently aware. And so just in answering your question, yes, we have tools. Our Security Operations Center is active around the clock monitoring for events, and we frequently escalate to a higher level of vigilance when there are different events that occur worldwide. And I think there is still significant room to leverage AI, machine learning, robotic process automation to augment our capabilities there.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little, you had mentioned partnering. I know that Homeland Security and other entities are partnering on a national level so that they can share. The more people that are aware of the newest naughty things out there in the cyberspace, you know, the better. So I'm assuming you would include Homeland Security and some, you know, nationwide cooperative partnerships?
Absolutely, Chair Nelson, absolutely. And then, for example, in that event with Department of Corrections, they were activated, as well as law enforcement, immediately to share, you know, situational awareness of where things may be happening in other places. That is absolutely really important.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving more on to the project and program management phase, I was surprised that some of the tools that I'd used at different places weren't there. And so I'm trying to understand, I was very familiar with, you know, bug curves and progress, so that then you would know ahead of time when you would be able to say, okay, we can go on to the next phase. But do you have a structure of your project gates and definition of some of the processes that you could not share here, but maybe share with the committee and members?
Commissioner.
Chair Nelson, committee members, absolutely. I would love to come back and share more of that information. Our project portfolio at any given time is probably approximately 400 projects in size. We use a combination of methodologies from agile frameworks to waterfall frameworks, and one of the areas that we have significant room for improvement still is just consistency and approach and intentionality behind approach. We certainly have phase gates and regular reviews. We have pretty stringent controls that we're evolving over the largest of our projects. We bring projects in front of our executive senior team for review and stage gate approval in various stages, and I would love to come back and share more information about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And project definition and that process, part of the issues and some of the past difficulties have been from project creep, not freezing, and I assume that you've got a good documented project definition process. And then in there, I'd like to see details of customer or end user feedback and at what stages and how they participate. So when you do your alpha testing and beta testing, do you have a mirrored database? Do you have a VPN for remote? Because most of our people are, you know, across the entire state. And what type of data reconciliation, data? I'm just worried about data integrity, because we had failures with that. When a police officer gets his new driver's license and has somebody else's picture on it, we know we've got problems. So if there's any information that you can let us know, there's been improvements or things put in to check, verify, and prevent, as opposed to after the fact cleaning up the mess.
Commissioner.
Absolutely, Chair Nelson. One of the things that I think it is important to highlight, and I think our work in the Blue Ribbon Council in particular, you know, the ability to share and gain a little bit more insight from our private sector partners, is some of the things that you reference as it relates to scope creep and you know, project stage gates, they're not unique to public sector. Those are the same issues that a Cargill has challenges with as well, or a Target or a 3M. And I think continuing to really focus on intentionality and process improvement as it relates to how we do that. Stakeholder engagement is incredibly important for us, and I'd love to share more as it relates to stakeholder engagement, for example, for the new driver and vehicle system and how that's going in, our work together with teachers and evolving teachers in our new teacher licensing system.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add to the comment here that in that definition phase, it's really important to know that the agency is the owner of the application and the requirements, not Minute. And a lot of these things go the wrong way when you leave it to the IT group to define the requirements for the software. So they're business requirements. They need to come from the agencies. And frankly, some agencies, we were teaching, I think, that principle, because you have to do those requirements sometimes before you even get the funding for whatever the software is you're looking for. So it's important that it's more than just a technology thing, which I believe you would concur with.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm also curious about the project review and the you know, target teams you have when there's an issue comes up. I was, I don't know if it was fortunate or unfortunate, when the CIO of a Fortune 50 called the CEO of IBM and they had an issue, they generated a team to resolve that issue, including hardware, software, and project people. And there was a process. I'm just curious as to, you know, the process. You don't have to give it here, but it'd be interesting to see the process that, and the different components from the organization that get called in and involved, because responsiveness, does it, you know, there will be bugs in the code, there will be issues popping up. How you respond to it in a timely fashion is great to the customer, and our customer is the citizen of the state.
Commissioner, answer? Or?
I agree and would love to come back and share more.
Okay.
Okay, and then my closing.
On the air, could this be your last question? We've got other people on the list here.
Yeah,
I know we've got, I mean, we've got a lot of latitude today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will go on, and the I know that with cloud servers, cloud storage, cloud servers, there's some built-in where they do the updates and stuff, and that's part of what you're paying. So why don't we have, when agencies pay fees to Minute for the services, IT support, et cetera, a portion of that go into a dedicated account that you would use then for regular software updates, and then the type of hardware would be keyboards, monitors, you know, the normal office type things which make up most of the, you know, the use. You know, what is your opinion about defining a dedicated and, you know, 10%, 20%, whatever would be normal, so that we have, don't have to wait on the legislature to go, oh, here's special money to do what should already be part of the process.
Commissioner Tolles.
Chair Nelson, certainly additional funding vehicles and opportunities represent an opportunity to move the way technology is managed within the state forward. Many of the services that are provided include upgrades and updates and modernizations, whether it's operating system versions or otherwise. I think when we talk about modernization and falling behind, it is much, much more than patching of a particular operating system or upgrading hardware. It is a fundamental, the types of services that exist surrounding it have changed. At times, we have services that were created and rolled out before iPhones existed. And so retrofitting those with mobile capabilities, with workflow capabilities that are modern is much bigger. And it includes that really, really critical, you know, business process reengineering, changing fundamentally how we work and not just upgrading platforms to continue to work in the same manner.
And I know the last few years we've enjoyed a balanced budget and not having to worry about deficits, but I know my first couple terms in the legislature we faced a lot of deficits and they kept rolling on, and when you have dedicated accounts like that, both sides of the both parties, when they're looking to balance the budget, are looking to take money out of every one of those little accounts, and plus that also then takes care of some of the transparency that we have as legislatures to make sure the money's being spent properly. So I mean, so that sometimes is an issue too. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Tolmans and King, for your work. I appreciate it. I'm very encouraged by the report on the Blue Ribbon Commission. I think this is a helpful and hopeful step for us. I'm curious about the interaction between the private sector and public sector in this commission, kind of the interaction of culture. Anyway, so I have two questions related to that. One is, and there are very different companies and organizations kind of on this commission, but are there general principles that are shared about how these private sector companies invest in IT upgrade and keep it modernized, and also think about executing, implementing new programming that might be helpful for us to hear at a high level.
And if we can keep our start keeping our answers more concise, because we're running short of time here, and I've got more people on the list that want to ask questions. So, Commissioner King, or our Commissioner, or Mr. King.
I'll go ahead. Thank you for the comments. I would say that the first thing that you have to do when you bring in the CIOs from private, they need to understand a little bit more about how the state operates. So we spent some time with that. And I think then they contribute their individual companies' approaches to some of the problems that are faced by the state information office. So they have a nexus of commonality and then nuances that are different based on their industry. But they tend to be pretty standard. There are standard industry practices. And I think Commissioner Tomes has brought that ethic to the state office here to try to mimic the best practices of industry within sort of the guidelines that you have to deal with in the state. One of the things we have to peel apart is, you know, are you following a guideline of the state because you have to, or is it something we can unearth and do better? And we've found some of both of those.
Thank you.
Representative Lippert.
So one other question. It seems like one of the challenges, it's deeper than just finance. We talk a lot about what we fund, how much we're going to fund. Is it, and in the private sector, hopefully you have everyone on the same team or pulling in the same direction as you're moving forward on a project. You debate what to do. You decide what to do. At a certain point, the debate stops, and there's a foundation underneath the new project that's going forward, and it's able to go forward. And if people aren't on board, they are off the team at some point. They get fired. Here, the debate never stops. It seems like that deep disagreement is a part of our challenge, and IT is a part of what suffers. So we may have a project going forward. it's people are set off to execute it, but the ground underneath is always shifting, and that affects IT, affects service delivery in many, many ways. So I'm wondering if there have been conversations about that, about how to safeguard good IT practices in this environment, which is different than the private sector environment.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that is an interesting point. People will perceive that the private sector doesn't have some of those same dynamics. While you don't have parties and so forth, you do have tribes.
Sure.
There's people that believe the best product is made by company X and the other one is made by company Y, and they're driving hard at their individual things. With a hierarchical leadership and maybe a little more threat of reassignment or unemployment, things in a company might go a little bit smoother, but there's still an undercurrent of, if things go wrong, I'll come up and say, I told you so. So the tribal thing cannot be eradicated. It might be. Maybe it could be a little worse in the state government than it is in the private sector. In certain companies, it's worse than others. But we all face trying to create an environment where the leadership gets people on the team to sign up and believe that everybody's been heard and that we're going forward this way and that you contribute to the success. And then when you have success, as they say, success has many fathers, so people jump on board. When there's something going wrong, that's when the defections start, whether it's state government or companies, I would say.
All right. Thank you. That's helpful.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know the hour's late, but since I'm not going to be here next year, and this stuff is really, I just applaud you on these efforts because it gives me a lot of optimism relative to where we've been over the years and some of the discussions we've had in this committee. If I could just share three thoughts going forward. First of all, I've always looked at, unfortunately, IT as non-generating overhead. I know I have to spend on it, but it's not going to make me any money because I have to do it. I would suggest here in the legislature, our generating revenue is the ribbon cuttings that you guys have been talking about. This is something that has to be done or the ribbon cuttings will never occur. So as you look at this and as you look at budgeting, and I know it gets tough in a deficit year, it doesn't mean that this goes away. And the example I'd use is during the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, as I was building our family business, when I added overhead, it was always something that I could make money off of. When our daughter came in, who's now president, she took an interest in IT and said, we got to go in a different direction because we've got all of this cybersecurity and all these threats. I, at the outset, I kind of didn't go that way because I wanted to generate revenue. But I've come to the belief that she was right. We have to invest in this, even though it doesn't get us any revenue or publicity. Secondly, this idea of giving up something, the silos when it comes to IT are so harmful. We have to get over that and look at this holistically, whether it's us as committee to committee or the agencies. And third, Representative Elkin talked about the Legislative Budget Office. Now that we are in control of this, when I went back and I wanted to figure out what went wrong with MNLARS, the first thing I went back to ask for was the fiscal note because that has the plan. There was no fiscal note. It was just a line item in the budget appropriating money. As we do this with a LBO, not only do we need to make a current decision, but maybe there's an addendum to this thing that's a little deeper in the weeds so future legislators can go back and look at what should this thing have done and how should we hold it accountable and where should it go so we know what we have to spend on. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Talked as fast as I can.
Well, thank you. And they're all good points. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, having sat on this committee for a few years, it feels like a breath of fresh air to be in here and having the conversation the way we are. But I do want to just say that, I mean, a lot of that is due to our over 2,000 minute employees that really have hung in there through some really difficult times and taking some pretty hard hits from this committee in particular with some things that have happened and been said and proposed. So I just want to say I really appreciate the work of our state government employees that have been there in minute in the work, and I feel like this is a really great place for us to be and have these conversations about it and being collaborative as we move forward and the great work of the Blue Ribbon Commission. So thank you for your work.
Representative Elkin.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of close by observing that when and this part of the conversation has been great, that when the Blue Ribbon Council finalizes its recommendations and it and turns it into legislation, there will be a fiscal note next year. And it may be substantial.
Any further comments with that? Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. It was good information, and I think we had a good, robust conversation that I think we all can agree that will help us all. And with that, members, we're adjourned.